This is In the News for June 28, 2006. I'm Scott Bergwin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. Up first today from the ENS Newswire, that's Environmental News Service Newswire, at ens-newswire.com. U.S. emits nearly half world's automotive carbon dioxide. It's dated June 26th out of Washington, D.C. The United States has 5% of the world's population and 30% of the world's automobiles, but the country contributes 45% of the world's automotive emissions of the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide, according to a report released today by the advocacy group Environmental Defense. Automobile exhaust has weight. The report estimates that two mid-sized vehicles emit more than 9 metric tons of carbon dioxide, or CO2, a year into the atmosphere, where it blankets the Earth, trapping the sun's heat close to the planet. The authors present the image of a coal train that stretches 55,000 miles, long enough to circle the globe twice, carrying 314 million metric tons of carbon, the amount of CO2 emitted by U.S. cars and trucks in the year 2004. John DeSico, author of the report and senior fellow at Environmental Defense, said, quote, "Cutting greenhouse gas emissions from U.S. automobiles will be critical to any strategy for slowing global warming," end quote. He continued, quote, "To address global warming, we'll need a clear picture of what sources are contributing to the problem. This report details, by automaker and vehicle type, the greenhouse gas contributions from America's auto sector for the first time," end quote. The report examines the three factors behind greenhouse gas emissions from automobiles: amount of driving, fuel economy, and the carbon content of motor fuel. The authors found that U.S. cars and light trucks were driven 2.6 trillion miles in 2004, with an average fuel economy of 19.6 miles per gallon, and they conclude that American vehicles are driven more each year and on average burn more fuel than cars in other countries. Small cars, compacts, subcompacts, and two-seaters were once the most popular type of car sold, and they accounted for the greatest portion of carbon emitted as of 2004, showing how long today's vehicles remain on the road. The report says gas-guzzling SUVs will soon be the main source of CO2 emissions from U.S. autos because in 2002 they overtook small cars in market share. In terms of usage, the U.S. light vehicle stock now has a half-life of roughly 8 years, that is, 50% of vehicles are replaced within that time. It takes 16 years for the American automotive fleet to be 90% replaced in terms of the carbon emitted during driving, the authors found. They said, quote, "In short, the choices made regarding new vehicles influence emissions for many years to come," end quote. In 2005, transportation-related carbon dioxide emissions, which account for about a third of total carbon dioxide emissions, increased by 0.2%, according to a report issued today by the U.S. Department of Energy Information Administration. Emissions related to gasoline demand decreased by 0.4%. Emissions related to diesel fuel grew by 1%, and jet fuel emissions decreased by 0.5%, the government report states. Environmental Defense President Fred Krupp said, quote, "Fixing the global warming problem without making cars more efficient is like trying to fix a leaky roof without a hammer. The leading automakers must accept responsibility for becoming part of the solution," end quote. You can find more on this at ens-newswire.com. Again, that's from Environmental News Service. Up next, taken from commondreams.org and published today, Wednesday, June 28th, from Interpress Service, written by Orlando Matos. Academics decry travel restrictions. This is out of Havana. As the United States and Cuba fire accusations at each other in the latest tumultuous chapter in their conflictive relationship, some members of U.S. scientific and student communities are working to salvage exchanges between the two nations. Professor Charles Verheeren of the Washington-based Howard University told IPS, that's Interpress Service, that these kinds of bilateral relationships are, quote, "indispensable. Communication among academics is a prerequisite for building a theoretical foundation through which the two countries can begin to bridge their gap," end quote. The expert is involved in a study on bringing post-secondary education to Cuba's neighborhoods using channels of teaching outside of the traditional campuses to make university education available to the masses. Verheeren says that, quote, "political, economic, social, and most importantly, philosophical understanding and reconciliation between the two countries is impossible," end quote, without this kind of engagement. The tense relations between Havana and Washington deteriorated even further earlier this month when the United States interest sections in Havana accused authorities of harassment reported cutoffs of water and electricity to the office. The Cuban government responded with an editorial in the local press accusing Washington's representatives of searching for pretexts to once and for all put an end to what little relations are left between the two countries. Verheeren noted that, quote, "it is getting harder," end quote, "for U.S. citizens who want to visit the island nation and said his status as a researcher is the only reason he was able to get to Cuba. However, he did not hide his concern that, quote, it is likely that the conservative George W. Bush administration will go so far as to prohibit this kind of academic exchange, end quote. In May, according to U.S. press reports, Bush postponed an announcement of new measures for stricter travel bans for academics and religious delegations. In March 2003, the U.S. government suspended permits for educational exchanges, and in May 2004, further tightened restrictions for all visa categories. Allison Hayes Conroy, a graduate student in cultural and political geography, is in Havana making, quote, contacts for a research project, unquote, in the food and agricultural sector. She explained to IPS that while she has been allowed to travel from her city, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to Cuba to take care of the initial research for her study, quote, I am worried because I don't know if I'll be able to come back, and that's just not fair, end quote. The researcher called the Cuba travel restrictions, quote, unquote, terrible because, quote, it is very important for both professors and students to interact and trade knowledge, end quote, with the Cuban community. Hayes Conroy said studying, quote, the relationship between agricultural, food, and Cuba's situation over the past 10 years has been fascinating, and the results could be of use to people in the United States, end quote. There's much more on this at commondreams.org. Again, that comes from Interpress Service at ipsnews.net. And finally today, New Standard News at newstandardnews.net. This is written by Michelle Chen. Estate tax cuts sweetened with corporate welfare for timber. This is dated June 28th. As the Republican leadership in the U.S. House of Representatives works to gut the federal tax on dead millionaires' estates, the hunt for tax breaks has moved from the coffers of the ultra-rich to the nation's forests. An estate tax reduction proposal passed by the House last Thursday contains a sweetener provision to cut taxes for timber companies, tacked on in hopes of greasing the bill for Senate approval. But the move to axe taxes for big timber has riled environmental and taxpayer watchdog groups. They say that while lightening taxes for loggers might make estate tax reform more palatable to industry-funded politicians, it will come at a bitter cost to the public. The proposed timber tax reform would benefit lumber and paper companies by exempting 60% of the profits generated from growing and logging trees. The legislation would effectively reduce the industry's capital gains tax rate from 35% to 14%. Based on congressional budget projections by the progressive think tank Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, the tax break would sap some $940 million from federal funds over the first 2 years before coming up for renewal at the end of 2008. Critics of the measure view it as doubly craven. It not only lavishes corporate welfare on an already subsidized industry, they say, but goes further to entice potential estate tax swing votes by helping senators pander to their timber industry connections. Although it targets a different tax base than the estate tax, the timber tax cut dovetails neatly with the parliamentary horse trade over its parent bill. The measure was introduced separately last year with the co-sponsorship of several Democratic senators from the major timber-producing states, including Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray, both from Washington, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, and Louisiana's Mary Landrieu. Those lawmakers helped kill the controversial Senate proposal to repeal the estate tax, which was defeated by 3 votes earlier this month. But if they switch sides on the pending modified bill, they could achieve the 60-vote majority needed to move the legislation forward. Joel Friedman, an analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, said, quote, it's all a political ploy to try and garner votes for the package that passed the House, end quote. The forestry and forest products industries pumped over $3.6 million in political contributions into Congress during the 2004 election cycle, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, a nonpartisan organization that tracks campaign contributions. There's more on this at newstandardnews.net. Again, that was written by Michelle Chen. This has been in the news for June 28th, 2006. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We'll talk to you next time.